A logo appears in bold, slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. Now, in a black and white film, sparks shoot out of a radio transmitter atop the revolving Earth, an RKO radio picture. Titles appear. RKO Radio Pictures Incorporated presents Robert Mitchum as Jeff Bailey and Jane Greer as Kathy Moffat in Out of the Past. Copyright 1947. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Michael Brayton. Read by Peter Haydu. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. Now, out in the wide open country of the American West, mountains rise in the distance beyond a grassy prairie. A road sign points the way to Los Angeles, 349 miles, and Lake Tahoe, 78 miles in the opposite direction. More titles, with Kirk Douglas, Rhonda Fleming, Richard Webb, Steve Brody, Virginia Houston, Paul Valentine, Dickie Moore, and Ken Niles. Executive producer, Robert Sparks. Screenplay by Jeffrey Holmes, based on his novel, Build My Gallows High. Music by Roy Webb. Produced by Warren Duff. Directed by Jacques Tourneur. Daytime. An open-top roadster cruises down the main street of a small town past a sign, Bridgeport. The broad-shouldered driver wears a black coat, gloves, and fedora hat. He pulls into a service station where a sign reads, Jeff Bailey. Getting out, the driver sees a teenaged boy cleaning a tire. The boy keeps working. The well-dressed newcomer squints at the boy's back, then steps closer, lights a cigarette, and tosses the match at him. The boy turns around.
Where's Bailey?
He shakes his head, then points to his mouth and ear.
Deaf and dumb, eh?
The boy nods, warily watching the newcomer, who turns and gazes at a passing police car.
Can you read lips?
He nods.
Where is Bailey?
He points away.
Coming back today? Come on.
The skinny boy nods. The newcomer turns and saunters across the street with his hands in the pockets of his black trench coat. Exhaling a puff of cigarette smoke, he goes into Marnie's Cafe, just as a car pulls up with a State of California seal on the door. A lean man gets out and heads into the cafe too. Inside, the newcomer starts up a jukebox as the lean man sits at the counter.
Hello, Marnie.
Well, look who's back.
You dye your hair?
Why?
I always keep thinking of you as a blonde.
For all the thinking you do about me, I could be bald-headed.
Come on, right. Did you miss me, honey?
If I didn't, I can't think of anybody else who did. One thing's sure, that Bailey don't miss nothing.
Neither do you.
She's your girl, and he ain't my man, so it's no skin off my nose. I just see what I see.
You sure you don't see what you hear?
Nothing can happen in this town that I don't hear about it across this counter. I'm just saying what I see. Every day they go fishing together.
Look, a sandwich.
Two things I can smell inside 100 feet. Burning hamburger and a romance.
Got a customer.
The newcomer.
What do you have?
Coffee.
Nothing else?
Cream.
She returns to her regular.
Where you been this time?
L.A.
Coffee?
Oh, thanks.
First she's got you, now she's got you and Bailey. And the only thing I seem to get is older.
Thanks a lot, Money. I'll see you later.
Leaving a coin on the counter, he walks out.
Guess I must have said something.
You talked enough.
Seems like everything people ought to know, they just don't want to hear. I guess that's the big trouble with the world.
Either that or you're on the wrong side of the counter. Tell me something.
You don't look as though I could.
That Bailey who burns you up, he run the gas station?
You know him?
I might have, once.
If he keeps mooning around Jim's girl, nobody will know him. And that'd be too bad.
You, see much of this Bailey?
Yeah, every day, from here.
I often wondered what happened to him. And one day I'm breezing through here, and there's his name up on a sign.
It's a small world.
Yeah, or a big sign.
Now on a hillside above a sparkling mountain lake, The teenager from the service station gets out of a car. He gazes down to the shoreline, where a tall, rugged man carrying a fishing rod sits with a pretty blonde woman.
They're just not feeding today.
They will later. It's clouding up. They say the day you die, your name is written on a cloud.
Who says?
They?
Never heard of them. Nothing in that one but rain. Think we ought to go home?
Yes.
Do you want to?
She smiles.
Every time I look at the sky, I think of all the places I've never been.
Yes, and every time you look up, they're all the same.
You've been a lot of places, haven't you?
One too many.
Which did you like the best?
This one right here.
Bet you said that to all the places.
You see that cove over there? Well, I'd like to build a house right there. Marry you, live in it, and never go anywhere else.
I wish you would.
They lean into a tender, brief kiss. The woman looks down.
You were never married before, were you?
Not that I can remember.
That's good. You'd be amazed the way people talk about you. The mysterious Jeff Bailey. My mother tells me that I've only known you for such a short time, and where did you come from, and what did you do?
Jeff spots the boy.
My father was...
Anne turns her head and watches as the frowning boy flashes rapid hand signs to his boss. The boy finishes, and Jeff stands up.
We'd better go.
Something the matter?
Maybe not.
Settling a cigarette in his mouth, Jeff collects his fishing gear.
Here.
Anne strikes a match for him, but the breeze puts it out.
You sure are a secret man.
She strikes another match.
Thanks. Oh, a man just wants to see me.
Oh.
Side by side, they head up the hill to their car. Later, at the service station, the newcomer stands waiting out front by the pumps. Turning, he sees the tall, broad-shouldered Jeff Bailey striding over, puffing a cigarette. They shake hands.
Long time.
Hello, Joe. I wish it was nicer to see you.
Everyone sure missed you, Jeff. But not as much as I have.
How's that?
Witt used to look at me, shake his head, and wish I had brains like you.
What's the other reason?
I had to find you.
I owe you something.
Not me.
Who?
How far can that kid read lips?
I don't know. I'll ask him sometime.
This far?
You don't like to make any mistakes, do you, Joe?
They don't let me have many.
All right, come on inside.
The kid soberly watches them head into the open service bay.
Funny racket to find you in, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, me and the kid laugh all the time.
I guess it's because it's respectable. That hassling her across the street says you are, too.
How did you happen to find me, Joe?
Well, I was driving down the road one day, and who do I see pumping gasoline but my old chum from the old times? Of course, there's a different name up on the sign.
So you just dropped in.
Why not?
Okay, then I'm glad to see an old pal, too. So I take you to dinner, buy you a couple of drinks. Gets late chewing the fat, you hop in your car and you're gone again. Is that right?
Almost.
What else?
I'm still working for that guy, Jeff.
Wait.
He'd like to see you.
As much as you did?
Worse.
I see.
No one ever thought more of you than Witt.
Or more about me.
Well, that could be, too.
All right, what's he want, Joe?
Maybe he's got something nice for you.
Try once more.
Look, Witt never steered you into anything bad, did he? Why, he never even squawked when you blew the best thing he ever gave you.
Go on.
The guy just wants to see you.
Well, you put it that way, what can I do?
You know of any other way to put it?
Jeff gazes down at the floor.
Say tomorrow morning?
Where?
Lake Tahoe. Turn right at Emerald Bay. Big house on a hill. You won't miss it. You can't.
Joe grins broadly and strolls away, his hands still sunk in the pockets of his black trench coat. Nighttime. Jeff Bailey's fastback sedan pulls up in front of a farmhouse. Wearing a fedora hat tugged low over his lean, rugged features, he gets out and ambles to the gate.
Are you going to stand for it? With a man who won't even come to the door?
Anne hurries out to meet him.
Don't worry about them.
Jeff bows his head.
Darling.
It's no good, is it?
Doesn't matter. It's just that they...
Oh, honey, I know how they feel.
Don't worry about it.
I'm not.
Then don't look so grim.
No, it's something else.
What?
The guy that showed up today.
Yes.
Want to take a ride with me up to Lake Tahoe?
Now?
Yes, now. I want to tell you something.
All right, Jeff.
You told me once I'd have to tell you sometime. Well, this is it.
Anne sits in the passenger seat, her full lips tense. Jeff goes around to the driver's side and gets in. Later, moonlight illuminates Jeff's long nose and cleft chin as he drives.
Now, the first thing I want to get off my chest, my name isn't Bailey. It's Markham.
Markham? Jeff Markham?
I should have told you before. I meant to, but I kept putting it off. Because I didn't like any part of it.
Please tell me, Jeff.
Some of it's going to hurt you.
It doesn't matter.
Well, a friend Markham lived in New York. He worked with a sort of stupid, oily gent by the name of Jack Fisher. We called ourselves detectives. That was about 3 years ago, maybe more. Wintertime. One of the coldest days I remember in the town. And we got a call to come over and see a big op.
A what?
An operator. Gambler. He didn't come to see us because he was too high-powered a character. Also because some dame had taken four shots at him with his own .38. Made one of them good.
He lights the cigarette dangling from his lips.
He was taking it in stride, but he had a friend who was a ball of fire.
Newspaper guys, wise guys.
In a flashback, Joe holds a paper.
So he shot himself cleaning a cap pistol. So I shot the ace of spades out of his sleeve during a gin game. A guy can't even get shot in his own apartment by a dame without the whole town starting to buzz like a...
Like you?
Wit gazes keenly at Jeff, who sits looking at the ceiling.
You just sit and stay inside yourself. You wait for me to talk. I like that.
I never found out much listening to myself.
Wincing, Wit shifts in his chair.
Amazes me how she missed so often.
Maybe you were moving.
You know, a dame with a rod is like a guy with a knitting needle.
What's he doing here? I called you.
My partner.
Jeff sits up.
Should I ask why you didn't call the law?
Should you?
I guess not. Anything happened to her?
She ran out on me.
With 40,000 bucks.
I want her back.
All the money?
You know, I once bet $40,000 on a horse that ran dead last, so I bought the horse.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Oh, you're wrong. I put that horse in a nice green pasture so he'd never get his foot caught in a mutual machine.
You should go out and visit it sometime.
Wit smiles.
No, I just want her back. When you see her, you'll understand better.
Maybe she's just an impulsive girl.
Shall we let it go at that?
I can let it all go.
Even 5,000 now and 5 when you bring her back? And expenses?
Now, that should have been the first thing you said.
Find her, Jeff. Bring her back.
Why me?
Well, I know a lot of smart guys and a few honest ones. And you're both.
Rising, Jeff puts on his hat and takes a cigarette.
What happens to her?
I won't touch her.
Jeff blinks his heavy-lidded eyes and lights up.
Okay.
Wit tosses him a bankroll.
Give me the stuff on her. Family, pictures, anything interesting.
You'll get it.
I'll see you. You bring it over, Joe. Come on, let's go.
His partner follows him.
Oh, by the way, you mind telling me your name?
Kathy Moffat.
Thanks.
The two private eyes walk out.
She must be quite a dame. A wild goose with 40 G's. You know, for a smart guy, that Sterling sure trusts you, don't he?
Why not?
Am I going along?
Nope.
Oh, he doesn't like my personality, huh? Well, I'm still in, Jeff. 50-50.
Did I say anything different?
All right, all right. It's a good soft touch. Don't get hot at me. And don't get any cute ideas.
Later, in a crowded black nightclub, well-dressed couples dance to the music while other patrons chat over drinks. The owner ushers Jeff across the room to a table where two young couples sit by candlelight.
These are on me. This is an old friend of mine, Jeff Martin. He wants to ask you something. Which one of you is Eunice Leonard?
Me.
May I ask you a few questions?
Eunice looks to her date, who nods.
Come on, honey, it's time.
The other couple gets up, and Jeff sits in an empty chair.
You work for Catherine Martin?
Not anymore. She's gone. She got pushed around. I wouldn't have stayed myself, only she got sick being vaccinated.
How come you're asking?
I want to find her.
You want to find her for that man?
No, for myself. Where'd she go?
Maybe I oughtn't to tell nothing.
Maybe more harm had come to her if you didn't.
Is she in harm now?
I don't know. She disappeared.
Maybe you better say, honey.
Well, I can't say much. It wasn't no cold place, though. That girl sure hated snow. Them clothes she took. She was looking for sun. Florida.
You sure about that?
No, I seem to remember. And I'm sure.
No trunk?
She only took suitcases.
You sure again?
I know. I weighed them for her on the bathroom scales.
How much did they weigh?
131 pounds.
Exactly?
Exactly. On account of that's what I weigh myself.
Thanks. Bring him another round.
Jeff pays the waiter and leaves.
You don't get vaccinated for Florida, but you do for Mexico. So I just followed that 90 pounds of excess baggage to Mexico City. She had been at the Reforma and then gone. I took the bus south like she did. It was hot in Tasco. You say to yourself, how hot can it get? And then in Acapulco, you find out. I knew she had to wind up here because if you want to go south, here's where you get the boat. All I had to do was wait. Near the plaza was a little cafe called La Mar Azul, next to a movie house. I sat there in the afternoons and drank beer. I used to sit there half asleep with the beer and the darkness. Only that music from the movie next door kept jarring me awake. And then I saw her, coming out of the sun. And I knew why Witt didn't care about that 40 grand.
Do you believe it, please?
Sí, señorita.
Shapely and young, Kathy Moffat sits down at a nearby table and lights a cigarette between her full lips. She wears a short-sleeved, low-cut dress. Lustrous, curly hair spills out under her broad-brimmed sun hat. Jeff pays for his beer and ambles over as a portly man comes in.
Señorita, señor, may I speak some words? You will be seated, señor, eh? Yes?
With pleasure, señor.
Jeff sits at Kathy's table.
I am José Rodriguez, a guide, a most excellent guide.
Indeed.
You asked them. They can tell you that José Rodriguez knows Acapulco as no one else. Each little street is...
I don't want a guide.
Very difficult girl.
Is there one not so, señor?
Perhaps a loaded ticket. No. I have here, wrought by skilled hands, a ring. An earrings of jade and pure silver.
These.
Jeff pays for the earrings.
Gracias, señor. Gracias.
After José leaves, Jeff offers them to Kathy.
I never wear them.
All right. Please.
No, thank you.
My name is Jeff Markham, and I haven't talked to anybody who hasn't tried to sell me something for 10 days. If I don't talk, I think. It's too late in life for me to start thinking. I could go down to the cliff and look at the sea like a good tourist, but it's no good if there isn't somebody you can turn to and say, nice view, huh? It's the same with the churches, the relics, the moonlight, or a Cuba Libre. Nothing in the world is any good unless you can share it.
Maybe you want to go home.
Maybe that's why I'm here.
Is it?
She smiles.
Well, there's always José Rodriguez. If it gets too lonely, there's a little cantina down the street called Pablo's. It's nice and quiet. Man there plays American music for a dollar. Sip bourbon and shut your eyes. It's like a little place on 56th Street.
I wear my earrings.
I sometimes go there.
Turning, she tucks her handbag under her arm and walks out into the sunlight. Jeff smiles as he watches her go. Later, he visits a Western Union office.
I went to send a wire to Whit that I'd found her. But the telegraph office was closed for the siesta. I was glad it was, and I suddenly knew why.
Nighttime. Wearing a dark suit, he saunters toward the open door of a bar.
I went to Pablo's that night. I knew I'd go every night until she showed up. I knew she knew it. I sat there and drank bourbon and I shut my eyes, but I didn't think of a joint on 56th Street. I knew where I was and what I was doing. I just thought what a sucker I was. I even knew she wouldn't come the first night. But I sat there, grinding it out.
Jeff sits alone at the bar. Later, he slumps at a table, gazing into his drink.
But the next night, I knew she'd show. She waited until it was late. And then she walked in out of the moonlight, smiling.
A waiter in a tuxedo leads Kathy through a low archway into the dining room and seats her at a round table with a checkered cloth. Nearby, Jeff gets up from his own table. Wearing a loose-fitting suit and a short, wide necktie, he comes over. Kathy glances up as he sits beside her.
Oh, this is a coincidence.
Yes, it is. American music.
No, I've been here for 2 nights.
Thank you.
No, just waiting.
I haven't been lonely. Bourbon?
As you suggested.
Thank you, sir.
I've been sitting here for 3 hours. I thought the guy was going to break out with Melancholy Baby.
Kathy smiles.
You know, you're a curious man.
You're going to make every guy you meet a little bit curious.
That's not what I mean. You don't ask questions. You don't even ask me what my name is.
All right, what's your name?
Kathy.
I like it.
Or where I come from?
I'm thinking about where we're going.
Don't you like it in here?
I'm just not ready to settle down.
Shall I take you somewhere else?
You're going to find it very easy to take me anywhere.
You know, I'm a much better guy than Jose Rodriguez. Want to try me?
Gazing at her through half-closed eyes, Jeff downs his shot and gets up. Later, they play roulette.
You end up, that isn't the way to play it.
Why not?
Because it isn't the way to win.
Is there a way to win?
Well, there's a way to lose more slowly.
Les recettes où je manque.
I prefer it like that.
Chunk it in.
Don't you like your gum?
Not against the wheel.
Tell me why you're so hard to please.
Take me where I can tell you.
All right. Come on.
Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. Que puis-je?
Jeff follows Kathy away from the crowded roulette table. Later, they walk on a moonlit beach past a strung-up fishing net.
Wait a minute.
Turning, Kathy gazes at him. Jeff steps toward her and kisses her, gripping her shoulders in his strong hands. They pull apart, then join again in a stronger, passionate kiss. She gazes up into his eyes, then steps away as the wind tosses her long hair. Jeff watches, expressionless, then sits down beside her on the sand and stares out into the distance.
When are you taking me back?
He glances at her.
Is that why you kissed me?
No.
Whit didn't die.
He didn't?
No.
Then why?
He just wants you back.
I hate him. I'm sorry he didn't die.
Give him time.
You are taking me back.
There's no hurry.
I could have run away last night.
I'd find you.
Yes, I believe you would. You're glad you did?
I don't know.
I am.
He looks at her.
It was a little business, about $40,000.
I didn't take it.
How did you know it was taken?
It's what you meant. I don't want anything of his or any part of him.
Except his life.
I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know anything except how much I hated. But I didn't take anything. I didn't, Jim.
She leans close.
Won't you believe me?
Baby, I don't care.
They kiss passionately. Moonlight sparkles on the surf behind them. Later, back in town.
I never saw her in the daytime. We seemed to live by night. But what was left of the day went away like a pack of cigarettes you smoked. I didn't know where she lived. I never followed her. All I ever had to go on was a place and time to see her again. I don't know what we were waiting for. Maybe we thought the world would end. Maybe we thought it was a dream and we'd wake up with a hangover in Niagara Falls. I wired Whit, but I didn't tell him. I'm in Acapulco, I said. I wish you were here. And every night I went to meet her.
At the beach.
How did I know she'd ever show up? I didn't. What stopped her from taking a boat to Chile or Guatemala? Nothing. How big a chump can you get to be? I was finding out.
Kathy runs toward him.
And then she'd come along like school was out. And everything else was just a stone you sailed at the sea. I didn't know you were so little.
I'm taller than Napoleon.
You're prettier, too.
They share a soft kiss.
Do you miss me?
No more than I would my eyes. Where should we go tonight?
Let's go to my place.
She smiles up at him and leads him away.
It was the first time she had mentioned her place or going there. Maybe she decided something, or it was because the sky looked full of rain.
Later, in a rainstorm, they run hand in hand through a dark glade to the porch of a small bungalow. The windows glow with lamplight as Jeff and Kathy hurry in, soaked from the wet night.
It was a nice little joint with bamboo furniture and Mexican gimcracks. One little lamp burned. It was all right, and the rain hammering like that on the window made it good to be in there.
Here.
Kathy scrubs Jeff's hair with a towel.
Hey, not so hard.
Kathy puts a record on a phonograph.
Now yours.
No, Jeff, please, it's all right.
He rubs her hair.
No, not so hard, Jeff, you're my hair.
Hush! Try to dry your hair.
He nuzzles her bare shoulder. Smiling, she leans back in his arms. Jeff tosses the towel, knocking over the lamp. A gust of wind blows open the door. Outside, rain falls in streams from the edge of the thatched roof. Later, Jeff walks through shadows to shut the door. Kathy takes the record off.
You going with me?
Where?
Wherever it takes us.
Why?
To make a life for ourselves. To get away from Whit. He knows I'm here.
She turns to stare at him.
When?
Tomorrow. Pack in the morning. Meet me at the hotel. She can make it.
I can make it. Can we get away with it?
Let's find out.
You don't know Whit. He won't forget.
Everybody forgets.
Not Whit.
So we'll send him a postcard every Christmas.
Jeff, I'm glad you're not afraid of him.
I've been afraid of half the things I ever did.
And this time?
I'm only afraid you might not go.
She leans close.
Don't be. I'll be there tomorrow. Love me?
Mm-hmm.
Poco.
What's that?
Little.
Mucho.
She sinks into his embrace. Daytime. In his hotel room, Jeff pauses from packing a suitcase to check his watch. He wears dark slacks, a dress shirt with the sleeves rolled up, and a wide necktie. Sauntering over to the slatted wooden door, he opens it and stares.
Well, the last guy in the world.
I hate surprises myself. You want to just shut the door and forget it?
No, no, come on in.
Whit and Joe step in.
I like surprises.
When I was a kid, we were so busted that if we got anything at all for Christmas, it was a big surprise. Sit down, have a chair.
Thanks.
Been here long?
Oh. How long, Joe?
Hardly at all.
Jeff discreetly pockets the earrings.
I just wondered who might be following whom.
What makes you think that?
Look, I know how you trust people. About as far as you can throw Stefanos here. And that's all right with me, only let's not get so cute about it.
I'm on my way to Mexico City. See a man about a horse. On the level. A racehorse from South America.
Jeff returns to packing his suitcase.
Checking out?
Sure, why waste your money?
Did you find it?
No, only a trail. Not quite as hot as a prairie fire, but there. Sometimes a little too obvious.
He wipes his hands with a towel.
She's a clever little girl.
Is she?
Wouldn't you say so? You should have told me, Whit. Maybe I would have played it differently. Maybe she wouldn't have heard my shoes squeaking. Always a hop, skip, and a jump ahead of me. Mexico City to Tosco to here.
Here, Jeff. You see her?
No. I wish I had. I don't like playing games when I'm the fall guy. You might remember that, Whit.
Jeff's sleepy eyes shift for a moment. Then, under Whit's heavy gaze, he goes to the door and opens it. It's a bellboy with a pair of shoes.
Thank you.
Gracias.
Paying him, Jeff takes the black and white wingtips and shuts the door. Whit eyes him.
Nice shoes. Sporty for you, aren't they?
Yeah, I got them down here. As I said before, I thought maybe the others squeaked. Well, let's go down to the bar. You can cool off while we try to impress each other.
Whit glares.
Fine.
Tossing his cigarette, he gets his hat and leads them out. Later, they cross the lobby.
Nice place. Like to stay here a while myself.
You did, by proxy.
Jeff stops short as he spots a trim woman wearing a sun hat. The woman turns. She's a blonde. Jeff takes a breath and joins Whit and Joe at a table by the bar.
Something tall and cool, I don't care what.
Two. Make it three.
So you blew it.
Anybody can have bad luck.
And squeaky shoes. Think of a number, Joe. Where were you off to?
Telegraph office. To YIU. I told you, I don't like to spend your money.
I can stand it.
Well, it's your business.
He lights up.
Whit, my friend, there's a million dames in this world, and they all look like her.
No, they don't.
The waiter brings their drinks.
So she was here.
And according to all available evidence, she was.
Maybe you should have sent Stefano's. Could you find one dame in a million, Joe?
The one with 40 grand.
Jeff spots Kathy entering the lobby. He knocks over his water glass.
Sorry.
Picked up some nerves.
I don't need a crack like that any more than I need your dough, which is what I've been telling you. I missed her. The dame caught a boat south.
Where?
Look, I got along before this job. I ate good and I grew as big as you did. And if there's something you don't like, you can say so.
I just asked where.
Chile, Guatemala. You want to go down and see the guy in the steamship company? You want to go down and talk to him right now?
Why not?
Jeff stands up. The sharp-chinned Whit smirks and follows him with Joe straight out the door into the street. A doorman meets them.
Taxi, sir?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You missed it and you feel bad. I shouldn't have joked about it.
All right, then I won't either. You get your $5,000 back and Stefano's can take over from here.
You're wrong. I fire people, but nobody quits me. You started this and you'll end it. Besides, Joe couldn't find a prayer in the Bible. You'll find it. Take it easy. Take your time. Well, better get back to the airport. Good luck, Jeff.
See you someday.
Wincing slightly, Jeff stands by as Whit and Joe get into the taxicab and ride away.
It wasn't all a lie because she did take a steamer. It was just that it went north instead of south. And I was on it, too.
Back with Ann.
I opened an office in San Francisco. Cheap little rat hole that suited the work I did. Shabby jobs for whoever hired me. It was the bottom of the barrel, and I scraped it, but I didn't care. I had her. We kept pretty much to ourselves. We found a little movie house in North Beach. We were on the run. We went to places we never would have seen in our lives. And after a while, we grew a little more sure of ourselves. We drifted back to more familiar places. Ballparks and the racetracks. Why not? After all, there wasn't one chance in a million we'd bump into our past.
In line at a racetrack betting window, his old partner Jack Fisher spots him.
One chance in a million was all that chump ever had in his life, and he made it good. He just stood there with our lives in his pocket, because I knew if he ever saw her, he'd sell us both for $1.95. So we had to separate. I went alone to L.A., and I made it easy for him to follow me. It was a good gumshoe. It was the one thing he could really do. So I went everywhere like a guy enjoying the country. I didn't write to her, or phone, or telegraph. I just waited and moved. When it seemed right, I blew out of town to go and meet her. I wasn't bad at the game myself, and I was sure I had shaken him loose and I felt pretty good.
At night, Jeff pulls over to let a bus pass, then turns onto a dirt road leading into the woods.
Fisher was back there somewhere, and I could see her again. We'd arranged to meet at a little cabin off the highway on Pyramid Creek. It was dark when I was getting there, and then I saw her walking up the road in the headlights.
Outside the cabin, Kathy steps aside as Jeff drives up in his fastback sedan.
You want a lift, babe?
Well, I really hadn't ought.
He gets out.
You're a cute little package to be out walking alone at night.
You're kind of cute yourself to be walking alone any night.
That does it.
They kiss. Kathy beams as Jeff puts down her grocery bag and kisses her again.
It was meeting her somewhere, like in the first times. There was still that something about her that got me. A kind of magic or whatever it was. Well, I held her and we could laugh. Because we were together again, we'd played it smart and forgotten nothing. Forgotten nothing except one thing.
Behind them, a man strides over from another car. Jeff squints from the doorway into the darkness. It's Jack Fisher.
He had followed her.
Hello, Jeff.
Fisher strolls past them into the cabin. With his hands sunk in the pockets of his overcoat, he takes a seat and smiles.
Don't I get introduced? I don't blame you, Jeff. Maybe I'd light my head off just like you did. Your picture don't do you justice, baby.
Why don't you break his head, Jeff?
Cute? Witt should have got her back. From what I understand, they deserve each other.
You working for him now?
Who else would he get to find my partner?
All right, Fisher, what's the pitch?
You and I had a little deal, Jeff. $10,000 in expenses. 50-50. Remember? You used to have a good memory. Whatever happened to it?
I didn't collect.
Not the $10,000.
If I can give you a tip. You tell Witt where we are. He might slip you a sore book.
Jeff, he isn't going to tell Witt anything.
Sure not. You just come up with that $40,000 and we're all pals again. I might even cut you in for a piece of it.
There isn't any $40,000.
Of course Witt's broad-minded. He don't care about a few slugs in the stomach or the $40,000 the dame went off with. Or even Jeff pretending he fell down on the job. But you and Jeff ganging up together, he might not like that.
Tell him, Kathy.
Sure, I shot him. I'm not sorry about that. But I didn't take his money.
Beat it.
Look at all the angles. You know Witt and you know how far he can reach. So just pay me off and I'm quiet. But use cash. Don't try to pay me off with pitch handed to you with this cheap piece of baggage.
Jeff takes a swing at him.
I was hoping you'd do this.
They square off and fight, trading punches. Kathy watches them with wide, gleaming eyes as Fisher socks Jeff in the jaw and gut. Now Jeff knocks Fisher back. Fisher grimaces and puts up his fists. Jeff lands an uppercut. Fisher collapses to the floor. Jeff stares at Kathy, who slowly lowers a gun. She gazes coolly at him as he catches his breath. Turning, Jeff kneels beside Fisher, rolls him onto his side, and gazes down at him. He looks at Kathy.
You didn't have to kill him.
Yes, I did. You wouldn't have killed him. You would have beaten him up and thrown him out.
You didn't have to do it.
You wouldn't have killed him. He'd have been against us. Gone to Witt.
Jeff slowly takes out a cigarette and puts it between his lips, then rises to his feet. He turns. Kathy's gone. Jeff stares out the open front door and sees his car driving away past Fisher's parked car. His downcast gaze settles on a bank book under Kathy's purse. In it, under the title Savings Account, is a single deposit, $40,000. Now back in the car with Jeff and Ann.
I buried him up there. I wasn't sorry for him or sore at her. I wasn't anything.
Did you ever see her again?
No.
Did you want to?
No.
They drive through a gateway toward a large house on a lush hillside. Jeff parks by the front entrance.
Well, I told you it wasn't a nice story.
And I told you once that whatever had happened was done.
Yeah, but you should have known about it long ago.
It's all right, I understand. And it's all past.
Maybe it isn't.
What'll happen?
I don't know. It's been a long time. I don't know how much he knows.
Don't go, Jeff.
I've got to. I'm tired of running. I better clean this up some way. Just one thing, Ann. You want me to come back?
Of course.
Jeff gently kisses her lips, then her hand.
Put that in your pocket.
Ann's soft gaze lingers on him as he gets out of the car. Turning, Jeff looks back at her with a cool smile. Ann returns it, then drives away. A cloud of dust rises as the car speeds off down the driveway. Propping a cigarette in his mouth, Jeff turns and gazes at the wrought iron gate in front of him. It swings open at his touch, and he strolls through. Later, Joe ushers him into a spacious den.
Who's here?
Whit beams and strides over.
Hello, Mark. I'm glad to see you again.
You know, I always wondered if you missed me.
Same guy. Time-proof, weatherproof. Cigarette?
Smoking.
As Joe looks on with a faint smirk, Jeff lights Whit's cigarette.
Thanks. Had breakfast?
No.
Joe, tell the boy we have a guest. Say, I understand you're operating a little gasoline station.
You say it like it was hard to understand.
Well, it is.
It's very simple. I sell gasoline, I make a small profit. With that, I buy groceries, the grocer makes a profit. We call it earning a living. You may have heard of it somewhere.
I may have, but it wasn't from you.
I didn't mean to hurt your feelings, Whit.
My feelings? About 10 years ago, I hid them somewhere and haven't been able to find them.
Where did you look?
In my pocketbook.
They gaze out at the lake.
Nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it must have set you back a few shells.
Always worrying about my expenses.
It's a nice view. Am I here to admire it?
Not exactly. I need your help.
Like old times.
I always liked you.
You liked me because you could use me. You could use me because I was smart. I'm not smart anymore. I run a gas station. I like the view.
Can you still listen?
I can hear.
Well, you told me about your business. Well, mine is a little more precarious, and I earn considerably more.
So I've heard.
So has the government.
Well, this may sound ridiculous, but you could pay him.
Well, that would be against my nature.
All right, forget I said it.
So I collaborated with a certain man who understands these things. He saved me quite a bit of money, $1 million. I didn't particularly trust him, so I paid him well, but he's unhappy. He wants more money.
Well, he saved you a lot.
Well, I appreciate it. I always remember what any man did for me.
Or didn't.
Perhaps. The point is that now he wants $200,000.
Well, he could get 10% of the million from the government if he turns you in.
Oh, you're up on these things.
Has he got anything to trade?
Well, he has the income tax records, but I don't see why I should buy them when I might persuade you to get them for me.
Then I'd have them.
I know, but I can trust you.
You know, I don't think you can trust anybody. You better go in there and get them yourself.
I'd rather you did it.
I pass.
You don't like it?
No, I just can't get away from my business.
Well, it's a nice view. Let's have some breakfast.
Out on a long patio, Jeff follows Whit to a table. Behind him, Kathy comes to the patio door.
You remember Kathy, don't you?
Jeff turns, then blinks.
Yeah, I remember Kathy.
His lip curls as he walks around her.
Sit down.
Kathy's back in the fold now. You're back in the fold, too, Jeff.
I see what you mean.
You see, Jeff, you owe me something. You'll never be happy until you square yourself.
Did you bare your heart to him, Kathy?
I couldn't help it, Jeff.
Jeff sits.
Well, that settles things.
Does it?
You're working for me. This man I was telling you about, his name is Leonard Eels, but you won't go to him directly. He has a secretary that he's rather fond of. Her name is Meta Carson. You'll find her charming. She may even find you charming. I understand that women have. She'll tell you how it's lined up. You know San Francisco, don't you? around.
Like the monkey and the weasel.
We'll put you on a train this afternoon.
Right now, I'd like to get some sleep.
Find Joe. He'll show you to your room. And don't start worrying.
Why should I?
As Jeff goes inside, Whit watches him with arched eyebrows and a smirk, then turns his keen gaze on Kathy, who looks down. Later, Jeff writes a note. Anne, darling, I'm going to San Francisco. He looks up as Kathy comes in, her lustrous hair falling to the shoulders of her conservative dress.
Jeff, I had to come back. What else could I do?
You can never help anything, can you? You're like a leaf that the wind blows from one gutter to another. You can't help anything you do, even murder.
You can't say it was that.
I can say one thing. I buried him. What did you tell him? About us?
He grips her arm. She nods.
But you couldn't help it, could you, Kathy?
He knew it, Jeff. He looked right into me and he knew it.
How much?
What, Jeff?
I mean about Fisher. Did he look into you for that, too?
No, I didn't tell that.
Don't lie to me.
I didn't. I wouldn't tell him that. I wouldn't tell anyone that. I swear it, Jeff. Believe me.
Sure. Sure, I believe
you. I didn't know what to do. I was always afraid of him and afraid of what I'd done. I couldn't live that way anymore. I couldn't stand it. Oh, Jeff, I've missed you. I've wondered about you. Prayed you'd understand. Can you understand?
You prayed, Kathy?
Can't you even feel sorry for me?
I'm not going to try.
Jeff.
Look, just get out, will you? I have to sleep in this room. Let's just leave it where it all is. Get out.
Kathy's teary gaze falters, and she walks out of the room. Propping his cigarette in his mouth, Jeff sits back down at the desk to continue his note to Anne. Daytime in San Francisco. The Golden Gate Bridge spans the hazy horizon. A taxicab climbs a wide, steep street and pulls over to the curb outside a tall house. Jeff gets out, clad in a trench coat and a fedora. Pausing to glance up at the three-story house, he rolls his eyes and steps to the door. He's greeted by a shapely young woman.
Meta Carson?
Yes.
My name is Bailey.
Come in.
Wearing a low-cut dress, Meta steps aside.
I was expecting you.
I wasn't expecting you.
Should I take that as a compliment?
Whit told me you'd be charming.
Really? Would you like a gin and tonic?
That'd be nice.
You may have whiskey if you like.
That'd be even nicer.
She steps over to a liquor cabinet.
Miserable weather we're having, isn't it? Are you acquainted with San Francisco?
We were quite intimate.
Indeed.
We live together. It's a nice apartment you have here.
Yes, these old houses can be amusing when they're remodeled, can't they?
I used to live in one in New York that was old. It wasn't very amusing.
I've never been to New York.
You take a trip there sometime. You'll see one reason why I'm in San Francisco. Which said you'd tell me the other.
You know, you're rather charming yourself, but I'm afraid I don't quite understand you.
Well, if you'll drop this junior league patter, we may get the conversation down where it belongs.
You worried about something?
I don't know. Should I be?
Not if you do what you're told.
That's why I'm here. I do what I'm told. People trust me. Whit even trust me twice. Do you?
Just as far as I have to. Can you find your way to 114 Fulton Street?
When?
Tonight. I'll be there in the apartment of an attorney named Leonard Eales. You can call for me at 8 and look around. I can depend on that. We'll leave together. In a day or so, he'll take some papers home with him. I'll let you know. Then you get them. He won't be there.
Where will he be?
With me. I'm his secretary.
Well, it sounds simple enough.
It is.
Like 2 and 2 make 4.
That's right.
Jeff follows her to the liquor cabinet and lays a hand on her shoulder.
Just remember, I'm coming out of this in one piece, Miss Carson.
Do you always go around leaving your fingerprints on a girl's shoulder? Not that I mind particularly. You've got nice, strong hands.
She gazes up at him with long-lashed eyes. Jeff steps away and gets his hat, then shows himself out. Nighttime. Outside a cab company, Jeff leans against a car, waiting for someone inside.
Jeff.
Speedy, how are you?
Where you been? Did you marry some honest dame?
I went in the gasoline business down the line.
But you're looking for me now, ain't you, buddy?
I went out of business. Come on, let's take a ride in your hat.
Later, in Petey's taxicab, Jeff puffs on a cigarette.
Buddy, you look like you're in trouble.
Why?
Because you don't act like it.
I think I'm in a frame.
Don't sound like you.
I don't know. All I can see is the frame. I'm going in there now and look at the picture. I don't have to tell you to wait.
No, you don't have to tell me nothing.
They stop in front of 114 Fulton Street's front awning, and Jeff gets out. Flicking away a cigarette butt, he exhales the smoke and saunters to the door. Inside, Jeff walks slowly down a shadowy corridor. He pauses at the open doorway of an unfinished apartment cluttered with building materials, then continues to the next door on the right. Inside, an older man wearing a double-breasted business suit answers the door.
My name is Jeff Bailey.
Oh, yes, Miss Carson said you were going to pick her up. I'm Leonard Eales.
How do you do?
Bring him out here, Leonard.
Leonard shuts the door and leads Jeff to a spacious balcony where Mita Carson lounges in a chair.
Thank you.
Hello, Jeffrey. I always wanted my favorite cousin to meet my favorite boss.
Have a martini?
Thanks. You know, Mita always talked about you like you were the ninth wonder of the world.
She skipped one.
Well, Mita must be the eighth.
All women are wonders because they reduce all men to the obvious.
And so do martinis. So nice here, I hate to go.
Don't then. Why don't you both stay and have dinner with me?
Yes, why don't we?
We can't, Jeffrey. We promised the Biglows, remember?
I'll call them up. We can see them anytime.
We can't, Jeffrey. I'm sorry, Leonard.
Some other time, then. How long have you been in town, Mr. Bailey?
I don't really know.
You're on business? You might call it that. Where are you from, the South?
No. Tahoe.
We must go, Jeff.
All right.
Mita stands up and walks inside.
Your cousin is a very charming young lady.
No, he isn't. His name is Norman, and he's a bookmaker in Cleveland, Ohio.
Leonard frowns.
Where did you say you were from?
Tahoe. Where we worry as much about the income tax as anybody.
Frankly, you don't make sense.
Neither does my being her cousin. Or my being brought up here to leave my fingerprints around. On the other hand, maybe it does. You know, it could be that I'm the patsy and you're on the spot.
Coming, Jeff?
Right away. You keep the martinis dry, I'll be back.
Leonard's brow creases in a frown as he follows Jeff inside.
I'm glad you could come, both of you.
Mr. Hughes, you make a great martini.
Oh, thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Leonard.
Good night.
Jeff shakes Leonard's hand and leaves with Mita. In the hall, Mita glances sidelong at him.
For a man who appears to be clever, you could certainly act like an idiot.
That's one way to be clever. Look like an idiot.
You look like an underweight ghost. What did you say to him?
I told him he made a great martini.
You are an idiot.
So is he.
You think so?
Why not? He's in love with you.
They take the elevator down. Outside, Petey stands by his cab.
Mason Building.
Jeff exchanges a glance with him as he gets in with Mita.
Doesn't a conscience bother you crossing a nice guy like that?
Maybe he isn't such a nice guy. Maybe he crosses people, too.
Later, the cab pulls up outside the Art Deco facade of the Mason Building.
Do I go alone?
No, you go back to your hotel and wait.
Yes, ma'am.
The men watch Mita as she gets out and walks into the building.
Nice.
Awfully cold around the heart. Let's go. Hold it. Drive around the block and stop right here.
Petey nods and Jeff gets out. As the cab pulls away, Jeff saunters to the revolving door and enters the Mason Building. He pauses and gazes around the marble lobby, then consults a directory on the wall. Under E, he finds Leonard Eales, 708. Later, Mita Carson emerges from the building and walks to the curb in her fur coat and high heels. As she flags down a cab, Jeff watches from around a corner. The cab pulls up. Mita gets into the back seat and rides away. Jeff hurries over to Petey's cab, waiting nearby.
Follow up, Petey, then wait for me at Eel's apartment house.
The cabbie drives away, and Jeff exhales a breath of smoke. Later, inside, he walks down a hallway, presses the doorbell of an apartment, and waits. He tries the knob. Stepping back, he returns along the hall to the open door of the neighboring apartment and ventures into the dark, unfinished room. By the balcony window, two stepladders support a scaffold. Later, Jeff casually slips over a partition onto the balcony outside Eel's apartment and gazes into the deserted, well-lit living room. He tries the French door. It opens in a bit, then stops. Jeff pushes harder, and the door swings stiffly open. He looks down. A man's body lies on the floor at his feet. Jeff steps inside, then glances around and closes the door behind him. Walking across the room, he passes a lit table lamp. He peers warily through a doorway, then returns and picks up an overturned chair from the middle of the room. Later, he carries Leonard Eel's body over his shoulder to an empty closet in the unfinished apartment next door. Dumping the body inside, he closes the closet door, locks it, and pockets the key. He shuts and locks the balcony doors as well, then hurries out into the hall, closes the door behind him, and strides away toward the elevator. Reaching for the button, Jeff stops himself as he sees it's illuminated. He stares pensively at the elevator door, then takes a breath and heads down the stairs. On the ground floor, he finds the elevator button still lit. With his brow tensely furrowed, he strides across the lobby and leaves the building. Jeff glances furtively around, then hides himself behind a potted tree a few yards down the sidewalk. Now Petey's cab shows up, stopping at the curb just past the main entrance. Smoking a cigarette, he waits as Jeff gets in and the two drive off. Jeff steals a puff on the cigarette.
I lost her.
She's worth losing.
I jumped a signal and I got stopped by a Gabby cop. Here, you finish it.
The cigarette.
Shall I pick up a hack?
No.
Where to?
Telegraph Hill.
Did you have some bad luck?
Yeah, my timing was a few minutes off.
Later, in the moonlight behind a house, Jeff climbs over an ivy-covered wall and drops down into a back courtyard. Through an upstairs window, he glimpses a woman and two young men in conversation. Still wearing his trench coat and fedora, Jeff jogs down some steps and heads over to a pair of French doors. He tries the handle, then selects a key from his key ring and slides it into the lock. Light shines out through the curtains, silhouetting his face as he turns the key. The door opens in, and Jeff slips inside. He heads directly across the well-furnished room to a desk and starts to search the drawers. Finding various papers in the top drawer, he closes it and briskly checks the others. Jeff freezes, then smiles and resumes his search. Straightening, he glances around and nervously jiggles his keys, then heads for an adjacent room. He ducks out of sight, just as Kathy Moffat comes into the room. Wearing a fur coat draped over her shoulders, she picks up a telephone and dials a number.
Hello?
Mr. Tillerson.
Yeah?
This is Mr. Eel's secretary. I'm worried about Mr. Eel's. I know he's home, but he doesn't answer his phone. Would you go up and see if he's all right?
Maybe he went out.
No, he was to wait for my call. I don't want to be a nuisance, but I'm sure he's there and I'm worried. Would you call me right back?
Yeah.
Fillmore 0710.
Yes, Miss Carson. Right away.
In the lobby of the Mason building, the thin, bespectacled Mr. Tillotson peers at a row of room keys on the wall and takes one down. Now, back in the dark apartment, Jeff spies on Kathy from around a corner. The slender brunette goes to the refrigerator and takes out a bottle of liquor. An unlit cigarette dangles from her lips as she gets a glass and pours herself a drink. Carrying her glass to the phone, she picks up.
Yes?
He isn't there.
He isn't? Did you go in the apartment?
Yeah.
But he must be there. Thank you.
Her gaze darts in thought. As she dials a number, her lips press tensely.
Hello?
Joe Stefanos, please.
Then
leave word for him to call Miss Carson's apartment right away.
Turning, she comes face to face with Jeff.
Is there a slip-up, baby?
She tries to flee, but he shoves her onto the couch.
You by any chance send your friend up there to find Eel's dead?
No, Jeff.
Tell me.
He grabs her.
Tell me.
Don't, Jeff.
Don't what?
I don't want to die.
Neither do I, baby, but if I have to, I'm going to die last. Something slipped up, didn't it? They told you they were going to knock him off, and they haven't done it, have they? They haven't because I tipped him off. He blew.
He's all right.
Didn't you want him to be?
Yes. Yes, because if he dies, they'll say you did it.
Oh, you're wonderful, Kathy. You're magnificent. You can change sides so smooth.
No, Jeff, you're hurting me.
He pushes her away.
I'm almost getting it. Very pretty. Rick wants to get Eels out of the picture. He wants to square an old account with me. Two birds together. So I come to town with an address. A redhead takes me up to visit the chump who has to go. I have a drink, leave my prints around. I leave and somebody gets him. Eels dies, and the tax papers, they were in the briefcase that Mita took, weren't they? Papers go back to Witt, I'm the fall guy. There's only one thing missing, the plant. What was there to give me a motive? I wouldn't kill a guy for a martini. Tell me, Kathy.
They made me sign it.
Sign what?
An affidavit.
Go on.
I couldn't help it, Jeff. They made me sign it. I swear I couldn't help it. They said they'd find the body and tell the police I killed him.
Fisher. And you did tell them about Fisher. Only you told them I did. Foolproof and beautiful. And Witt can really hate, can he? You said it once. He can remember.
I never stopped hating him, Jeff.
She goes to him.
I couldn't help myself. I was caught, too. We don't have to be against each other now.
Aren't we?
No. We can break out of it. All we need is the briefcase. Then we've got them, Jeff. We can get anything we want from them.
I'd like that affidavit you signed.
We can get it. It's in Eel's office safe. We can make Mita get it. We can make them do anything.
Sure.
Oh, Jeff, you ought to have killed me for what I did a moment ago.
This time.
No, you won't. I've never stopped loving you. I was afraid and no good, but I've never stopped. Even if you hated me. Did you?
Yes.
But you don't now.
No.
We can be together again. In a way we never were. We can go back to Acapulco and start all over as though nothing had happened.
Their lips meet in a soft, slow kiss.
How do we get the briefcase?
Witt owns the club here. The Sterling Club on North Beach. Mita took it there to a man named Baylord.
I might get by with it.
You will, darling.
She opens the back patio door for him. After Jeff slips out, Kathy hurries across the room to press a buzzer by the apartment door, then drapes her fur coat over her shoulders and turns on a table lamp. She opens the door to Joe Stefanos, who steps in wearily.
All right, what happened to you?
I went to a bar and bought myself a double. I must be slipping.
I guess you must be.
He just stood there, shaking so hard he couldn't even pray. I never saw anyone so afraid to die. I didn't like it.
You killed him?
Certainly.
But I called there. A man went up and looked in the apartment and he wasn't there.
Eels?
Yes, Eels. He wasn't there.
I was there. And the way I left him, he didn't walk away. What's going on?
I don't know.
I do. Where's Bailey?
Now, outside the Sterling Club, Jeff gets out of a taxi and looks at the neon script name above the awning. With his hands in his pockets under a baggy suit coat, he glances around, then heads for a side door marked Service Only and opens it. He finds himself in a hallway where men in tuxedos check their coats. Elegant bunting adorns the walls and doorways. Jeff spots a neon sign, Manager, with an arrow pointing up a flight of stairs. He follows it, jogging lightly, then strides along a hallway to a closed door and walks in. Inside, a guy looks up from lighting his cigar.
What do you want?
He goes for the phone, and Jeff slugs him.
Yeah?
Mr. Baylor, the man just went up heading toward your office.
Forget it.
Jeff hangs up and starts yanking the drawers out of the manager's desk. Hidden behind them, he finds a slim leather briefcase. He slips it inside the front of his unbuttoned trench coat. Seeing a lighter on the desk, he flicks it on and lights one of the manager's cigarettes for himself. Jeff turns and strolls out of the office, holding the flaps of his bulging trench coat with one hand. As he descends the stairs, two men arrive at the bottom.
Want to see somebody?
I just saw him, thanks.
Jeff brushes between them and straight out the service door. The two men look at each other. Now, out front, Jeff puffs on his cigarette as the uniformed doorman hails him a cab. The doorman opens the door to the back seat, and the taxi drives away, just as the club manager comes out the service entrance with one of his associates.
You know that hack driver?
Yeah, I think so.
Rafferty.
Yeah?
Get Joe. Bring back that guy any way you have to, just so that briefcase comes with him.
Right.
Later, Jeff pays a delivery clerk.
All arranged, sir. Here's 20 for you, the rest for transportation. Have the boy meet me at the airport in a couple of hours with the ticket.
Thank you, sir.
You know, sometimes a bad memory is like what they call an ill wind. It can blow somebody luck.
I always say everybody's right.
With a briefcase under his arm, Jeff steps out onto the sidewalk. As he opens the door of a cab parked at the curb, Joe comes up behind him.
After you.
He shoves him in. It's Petey's cab.
You won't need this.
I couldn't do nothing, Jeff.
You can now. Start moving.
You sure get into a lot of trouble, don't you?
You shouldn't steal so much.
Later, Joe and an associate escort Jeff back to the office in the Sterling Club. Jeff stares. Kathy's there with the manager.
We meet in all kinds of places.
Kathy looks away. The manager walks over to Jeff and smacks him across the face.
That evens us. Now fold your hands or I'll fold them for you.
You talk big, mister.
Joe puts the stolen briefcase on the desk, and the tuxedo-clad manager quickly unzips it. He grimaces. There's only a San Francisco telephone book.
All right, wise guy.
I wouldn't. I told you, I'm tired of getting pushed around. You'll only get yourself out of breath. Won't he, Joe?
Cut it, Lou.
Your move now is to do a little thinking, a little talking. See, I've got the files that were in your briefcase. I also know the address of the Treasury Department. That's the theory, isn't it? Keep the files away from the Treasury boys, save Witt from doing 10 years in a federal pen. Now, you correct me if I make a mistake.
We may do that.
Sure. Of course, the government may just pat Witt on the back and say, go on home, we get all the dough we need. We'll never miss you $1 million. You want to lay a price on that?
How did you know I had the briefcase?
Jeff glances at Kathy.
I had me detailed.
You sure about that?
Look, I don't have to be sure about anything except the files. Now, do you want to talk business or do you want to play house?
What's your idea?
You get the files and you also get Eels' body. In case you want to keep it from the cops.
What do you want?
I want the affidavit that Mita put in Eels' safe when she took the files out. A lie that somebody put on paper that I killed a guy named Jack Fisher. Because you see, I only buried him. You don't get the gas for being the undertaker.
Four of us knew about that affidavit outside of Whit. Somebody talked.
Jeff eyes Kathy as he lights a cigarette. She gets up from her chair.
Did Mita tell you?
Nope. Sorry.
She picks up the phone.
Put in a call for Whit Sterling.
Now, sit down. We better keep Whit out of this.
That's right, Kathy. Boy, you've heard her feelings, Lou. I can tell you she's a sensitive girl.
I'm kind of sensitive myself.
And you won't need Whit. All you need is Mita to unlock that safe in Neil's office. I hope Mita's still around.
She's around.
Good. And you can start right now. I'll give you a ring in about an hour. That'll give you time to find her and get there. Give you a little extra time to figure out how you're going to cross me. But you won't.
He tosses the cigarette butt and walks out. Joe grinds it under his shoe. Later, outside the Mason apartment building, Jeff watches from across the street as a police car pulls up. Stepping back behind a parked car, he sees Mr. Tillotson meet the two policemen, and the three of them head inside. Another car cruises slowly past, Joe with Kathy and Mita Carson. The two women glance tensely at the building. Then the car continues on into the night. Later, Joe's car stops outside a newsstand. As Kathy hurries to a nearby telephone booth, Joe strides over to the man at the cash register and holds out a bill.
Will you bust this for me, Jackson?
Sure.
With a change, he joins Kathy at the phone.
That's right. Whit Sterling's at the Blue Sky Club in Reno. Shut the door.
Don't forget, those dames listen in.
Now in a wood-paneled office, Whit Sterling picks up his phone.
Hello.
Mr. Sterling?
Speaking.
One moment, please.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Whit, darling, this is Kathy.
Everything all right?
No.
Seldom.
I think you better stay where you are for a little while.
Well, could you tell me why?
I can't talk now. Things are mixed up.
Bailey mixed them?
I can't talk on the phone. We're trying to get a plane.
But you're bringing me something.
No, Whit. I can't explain now, darling. I just wanted to tell you. I don't want anything to happen to you.
Like what, honey?
Don't go to Tahoe. Be careful and wait in Reno for me. Goodbye.
Whit opens his mouth to speak, then hangs up. Back at the phone booth, Joe sees Kathy's tense frown.
You look like I might be in trouble.
You will be if we don't find Bailey.
I might be if I do.
Morning in the town of Bridgeport. A paperboy bicycles past street lamps aglow in the dusky dawn. He tosses a rolled-up newspaper onto the porch of Anne's house. Anne's bespectacled father steps out to retrieve the paper. As he unrolls it and walks along the hallway to the kitchen, Anne comes downstairs, pulling back her shoulder-length blonde hair into a ponytail.
Bridgeport service station operator sought in San Francisco slain. 5-year-old murder motive, the police say. Leonard Eels, prominent attorney, was found murdered in his department house, 114 Fulton Street, early this morning. Well, Jeff Bailey, at one time private detective, more recently operator of a small gas station in Bridgeport, is hunted for two murders.
I knew he was no good. I said all along, there's a man who should be run out of town. Look at that. Police are hunting him for two murders. I told you, Anne.
Anne.
Oh, leave me alone.
Anne hurries toward the door and grabs her coat. Now at the town police station, several men loiter outside the main entrance. Jim, the lean man from the diner, meets a detective coming out.
Cars. That is all.
Hi, Jim.
Hello, Ed. Did you talk to the kid yet?
He's gone. The station's locked up tight.
Going where?
Met you with Bailey.
Well, that doesn't make sense. If you had the law on your tail, would you let a guy working for you come up to chew the fat?
I'd want a partner, if I could get him.
Ed?
Yeah?
Our attention. Says Bailey took a plane to L.A. last night. No trace since. Says maybe headed this way.
Okay. Would you consider it too dumb for him to try to hole up here?
He'll come here, and when he does, I'll know it. See you.
As Jim strides to his car, Ed and another cop gaze after him.
What's he mean he'll know it?
What do you suppose?
Ann Miller. Me? I'll take the kid.
Ed heads away into town. Later, in the wilderness, Mountain Peaks dwarf Jim as he walks across a sunny clearing and finds Ann sitting alone by a meandering stream.
You all right, Ann?
I know what you're going to say, and I don't want to hear it. Jeff didn't kill anybody. He told me everything.
Has he got you mixed up in this? Has he?
Whatever he's mixed up in, I am too.
Well, I'm not going to stand by and see him hurt you. If he comes back here...
What'll you do? You won't go to the police.
I don't know what I'll do.
No, Jimmy.
You expect me to help him get away?
He walks off.
Jim.
Now in Whit Sterling's Tahoe mansion, Joe and Kathy find the kid waiting.
He can read your lips.
Kathy touches his shoulder.
Mr. Sterling is fishing. No, in the high mountains. Tell Jeff we're sending for him. Where can we reach you?
The kid takes a pad and pencil from his pocket, writes a note, and gives it to her.
Joe will find you at the station when we have word.
Glancing at them, the kid walks to the glass-paneled front door and settles his rumpled hat on his head before leaving. Joe and Kathy exchange a look.
I'm not so sure this is a bright idea.
You think of a brighter one on the way, come back with it.
Now up in the mountains, the kid's roadster motors along a winding forest road. Pulling off, it slows to a stop among the trees. Now a station wagon comes along the road and quickly stops by the pull-off. At the wheel, Joe frowns as he watches the kid get out with a fishing rod and tackle bag and head uphill. The station wagon follows the same pull-off and stops near the roadster. Later, while the kid fishes at a rocky stream, Joe trudges across a sunlit slope. Clad in a dark trench coat, gloves, and fedora, he enters the woods and stops at the top of a steep hill. Below him, the kid stands at the edge of the stream. Shaded by the tall trees, Joe makes his way down the hill toward the kid. As he rounds a boulder, he spots Jeff on the other side of the stream, smoking a cigarette outside his tent. Joe stops on a cliff above the stream and crouches down. 30 feet below, the kid stands motionless, gazing upward. As Joe aims a pistol at Jeff, the kid casts his fishing line, hooks Joe's coat sleeve, and pulls. Joe plummets off the cliff. Jeff turns and gapes as the kid calmly reels in his line. Exhaling a breath of smoke, Jeff pushes through the scrub and hurries across the rocks to where Joe's body lies sprawled at the base of the Whitewater Falls. He looks at the kid.
Party from Tahoe? Who'd you see, Sterling? Kathy?
The kid signs rapidly with his hands.
Cute kids, aren't they?
He nods. Jeff takes a final look at the dead man. Then he and the kid head away over the rocks. Nighttime, at the Tahoe mansion, where Kathy lies asleep in bed. Jeff appears outside the open balcony door. Slipping inside the shadowy room, he strolls over to the bed and leans against a nearby side table. He strikes a match for his cigarette. Kathy wakes up.
What are you scared about? Joe isn't coming back. He got careless and fell in the river. Did you hear what I said? Joe's dead, Kathy. Can't you find some tears for him?
He tosses her a coat.
Come on.
What are you going to do?
Talk things over with Whit. Don't you think I should?
Yes, of course you should. He wants to see you. He's waiting for you.
With his fishing rod? He told the kid he was fishing.
He came back late this afternoon.
I bet he's just pacing up and down, worrying about Joe.
You think I sent Joe?
Oh, you're wonderful, Kathy. All right, let's get on with it. Where is the gentleman?
Downstairs, in the library, I think.
Jeff, don't let him trick you. He'll pay anything you ask. He'll do anything you ask.
Sure he will. Anything.
Jeff opens the door. Kathy steps close to him.
If only there was some way about Fisher.
There is.
In the den, Whit stands by a hearth fire. Crumpling a treasury note with one hand, he tosses it into the flames. Jeff strides in with Kathy in tow.
Well, you getting things in shape for the treasury boys?
Hello, Jeff. I'm sort of expecting you. Well, yeah, let's get down to business. Start all over again, right? You have some papers of mine.
All right, you take the frame off me. You pin the Eels murder on Joe.
Sure, sure.
I get a modest settlement, say... Oh, say 50,000. That should be enough for me to spend my waning years in matted land. Not Acapulco, because I keep thinking about you, Kathy. Up there in the woman's prison in Tehachapi. It won't be too bad. Hills all around you, plenty of sun.
He pushes her into a chair.
You make me nervous. You'll be happier if you let the cops have her, Whit. That's what you'll have to do. Somebody's got to take the rap for Fisher's murder. It's not going to be me.
Wait a minute. I'm not framing any woman.
When did you reform? I wouldn't try it, Whit. You're out of shape. Besides, it's not a frame. She shot him.
He was going to kill you.
You see, Whit, self-defense. A cinch to beat, she might not even have to do time.
I'll say you killed him. They'll believe me.
Do you believe her? Go on, Kathy. Tell him about Joe.
What about Joe? Where is he?
Last time I saw him, he was in the East Walker River.
I didn't send him after Jeff. It was his own idea.
Witt's heavy gaze fixes on Jeff.
Did you kill him?
He slipped and fell. When I got there, it was too late. It's a mean river.
He was trailing you?
Well, you don't go fishing with a .45 in your hand. But stop worrying about it. It makes everything simple. A dead man, fish him out. Stick a note in his pocket. Suicide. He couldn't stand living with what he had done. Don't look so stricken, Whit. You'll get over it. I did. But you talk it out if you want to. I'll be waiting in there. Oh, one thing, Kathy. Did it take much persuasion to make you say I killed Fisher? Come on, feed my ego. Tell me he beat you. Tell me he had to drag every word out of you. Well, that's the way it is.
You said you were going. Get out.
With a cool smirk, Jeff saunters out of the den. Whit goes to the door and gently closes it, then turns back toward Kathy, his lean face tense and his jaw set. He slaps her.
You dirty little phony. Go on, lie some more. Tell me how you handled things for me in San Francisco. Tell me it was all Joe's idea. Go on, Kathy. Show me how you're going to squirm your way out this time.
Whit,
what a sucker you must think I am. I took you back when you came whimpering and crawling. I should have kicked your teeth in. No, I'm not going to. Not now, Kathy. We'll let the law push you around.
You can't.
You're wrong. You're going to take the rap and play along. You're going to make every exact move I tell you. If you don't, I'll kill you. And I'll promise you one thing. It won't be quick. I'll break you first. You won't be able to answer a telephone or open a door without thinking this is it. And when it comes... it still won't be quick. And it won't be pretty. You can take your choice.
Whit!
Turning, Whit walks to the door, opens it, and stands, waiting. Kathy's gaze falters. Then she sets her full lips and steps past Whit out of the room. Whit follows her to a living room where Jeff leans against a sofa, gazing into a fireplace.
I have to go to Reno for your money. Where's the file?
It'll be mailed to you. Look, I crossed you once. I know better than to try it a second time. I've got a reason for wanting to be let alone. You'll get the file after I'm out of reach.
Not if that's the way it has to be.
While you're in Reno, find a pilot who can keep his mouth shut. Tell him to set his plane down in the desert where he won't be seen. Make it about dawn. And cheer up, Kathy. You'll get out of it all right. You always have.
He leaves them and walks across the foyer to the glass-paneled front door. Now in Bridgeport, Anne steps out of her house. Sinking her hands into the pockets of her overcoat, she heads away along a path into the shadowy woods. A man spies on her from behind a tree. It's Jim. Later, Anne hurries past bare trees silhouetted in the moonlight. Behind her, Jim follows steadily. Anne steps around a gnarled stump and pauses, glancing around. Jeff appears. With a faint smile, he joins her.
They say you killed a man.
Do you believe him?
Not until you tell me.
You believe everything I say, don't you?
Everything you say to me, I believe.
I don't know why I do this. I don't know why I let you come back into my stinking life. Why I don't slap your face and send you home. I don't know.
Because you said you'd come back.
But not like this.
You didn't kill him, did you?
No.
She hugs him.
You know, I had to come back.
Watching them, Jim turns away.
Take me with you, Jeff.
I have to play this alone.
You've seen her again?
Yeah, I saw her.
Was it the same?
I saw her and it was nothing.
She can't be all bad. No one is.
Well, she comes the closest.
Are you going to see her again?
Tonight for the last time.
Then look at her. Look at yourself. And be very sure that there isn't even a little bit of love left for her. Then when you find out and you know it once and forever, send for me.
I don't have to find out. I know it now.
He kisses her.
That's all I wanted to hear.
You know, maybe I was wrong and luck is like love. You have to go all the way to find it.
You do to keep it.
You better go. Did the kid do what I told him?
They're following him south, the state police and all of them.
Good.
I can't go.
Jeff pulls her close and kisses her again, then turns away. Anne gazes after him as he strides away through the shadowy brush. Reaching the clearing where his car is parked, he finds Jim waiting. Jeff draws his gun.
You can put that away. I can't think of a better place to put it. I just want to tell you something.
Tell it.
I was going to kill you.
Who is it?
I'll tell the cops where you were. I followed Anne tonight.
What stopped you?
Some things you said to her.
You said you were going to tell me something.
I grew up with her. I've loved her ever since I fixed her roller skates. I don't know whether I'm good enough for her, but I know you aren't.
That's one difference. The other is that she loves me.
You told her yourself you didn't know why you let her back into your dirty life. I don't know who you were, what got you where you are, or where it's going to take you. She's not going with it.
Jeff steps to his car.
Why don't you say it to the law? And all the rest of your life you can tell her how you did it.
Getting in, he puts the car in gear and backs out toward the road. The glow of the headlights plays over Jim's narrow glare. Later, Jeff parks outside Whit Sterling's house. Striding across a patio, he opens a glass door and steps inside into the den where a fire flickers. Looking around, he stops and stares. His brow knits. On the other side of a sofa, a body lies sprawled on the rug. Whit Sterling. Jeff steps closer and gazes down.
Can't make deals with a dead man, Jeff.
No, you can't.
Behind him, Kathy steps out of the shadows. She looks down at the body, then at Jeff.
Let's get out of here.
There's someplace left to go?
I think so.
You're running the show now?
He follows her outside to the patio.
Do you mind, Jeff?
They gaze out over the lake.
Remember the mountains? Higher than these and always snow on them. We should have stayed there.
I'm trying to remember something else.
I never told you I was anything but what I am. You just wanted to imagine I was. That's why I left you. Now we're back to stay.
And I had nothing to say about it.
Well, have you? Wood's dead. A bundle of papers isn't any good. Joe was around, you could use him, but Joe's dead too. So what are you going to do about Eels and Fisher? For that matter, what are you going to do about this? Someone has to take the blame. If nothing on me, but I'd make a fine witness for the prosecution. Don't you see you've only me to make deals with now?
I'm building my gallows high, baby.
No. No, we're starting all over. I want to go back to Mexico. I want to walk out of the sun again and find you waiting. I want to sit in the same moonlight and tell you all the things I never told you. Until you don't hate me. Until sometime you love again.
They'll always be looking for us. They won't stop till we die.
I don't care. Just so they find us together. If you're thinking of anyone else, don't. Wouldn't work. You're no good for anyone but me. You're no good, and neither am I. That's why we deserve each other.
She kisses him, then pulls away and gazes steadily into his eyes.
Did he get the plane? Where is it?
I'm running the show, don't forget.
I doubt you'll ever let me. Where's the money?
Upstairs.
Better pack a couple of bags and get it.
They go back inside.
Put a few things in for me.
I have.
As Kathy hurries to the stairs, Jeff props a cigarette in his mouth, strikes a match, and lights up. He takes a heavy breath and notices a telephone on a sideboard. Squinting coolly, he picks up the receiver and dials zero. Upstairs in her bedroom, Kathy fetches a small revolver from her closet and places it in her valise. Wearing a trim dress and matching headscarf, she gathers a suitcase and pocketbook as well, then takes a final look at the room before turning away. Downstairs, she finds Jeff sitting by the hearth with a bottle of liquor and two shot glasses. He hands her one.
Thanks.
Por nada.
He pours his own.
You remember La Mar Azul?
I remember you were a very clumsy flirt, but I like that.
We owe it all to Jose Rodriguez. I wonder if he'll ever know what a bad guide he really was.
Jeff, we've been wrong a lot and unlucky a long time. I think we deserve a break.
They drink.
We deserve each other.
Jeff throws his glass into the fire, then stands and accompanies Kathy to the front hall, where he picks up her suitcase. Together they walk to the door and out into the night. Jeff shuts the door behind them, and they head across the driveway to the front gate. Kathy hurries to the station wagon parked on the other side and gets in as Jeff puts the suitcase in back.
Hurry, Jeff.
Sending her a calm glance, he saunters around to the driver's side and gets in. Kathy's gaze darts anxiously as Jeff tries to start the car. She pulls out the choke. Jeff glances at her. She stiffens and gives him a long look as he puts the car in gear and steers down the tree-lined driveway, in and out of shadow. Later, the car cruises along a forest road. Jeff stares forward, expressionless. Kathy's dark eyes study him, then widen at the road ahead as she sees a barricade of a cargo truck and police car.
Dirty double-crossing man!
She draws her gun. They struggle. Jeff doubles over. As Kathy takes the wheel, a cop aims a machine gun. Kathy shoots at him. He fires back and hits her. Now the car plows into the barricade. The machine gunner and a uniformed policeman warily approach the car. The policeman shines his flashlight inside, revealing Kathy, slumped over scattered bundles of money. He opens the driver door, and Jeff's body tumbles out onto the ground. The scene fades to black. Daytime. Outside the Bridgeport police station, Jim escorts Ann away through a crowd of onlookers.
Too many people, too much talk. Maybe that's why I like this town. Here, three people are really a crowd. Let's get in the car and get away from them. I won't talk to you, Ann. I just want to be with you.
Thanks, Jim. I can't.
Ann turns away, frowning, and walks across the road to Jeff's service station, where the kid sits alone on a bench. She joins him.
You can tell me. You knew him better than I did. Was he going away with her? I have to know. Was he going away with her?
The kid meets her gaze and nods. Anne squeezes his hand, then gets up and strides away. The kid stands to watch her as she crosses the street to Jim's waiting car. Anne gets in and closes the door, and the car drives off down the street toward the distant hills. The kid looks up at the station sign, Jeff Bailey. Smiling briefly, he gives a casual salute, then takes a breath and slowly walks away. Words appear. The end. RKO Radio Pictures. Fade to black.